Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Holder here. I am your host for Horseshoes with Holder. Another episode, big episode that just keep getting bigger and bigger because the games keep getting bigger and bigger for your Indianapolis Colts. They are now 9-6, headed into a absolute massive game in Week 17 against the Tennessee Titans. You already know that, of course, unless you've been living under a rock, which I don't suspect you are. So lots to look forward to this week. We'll look back a little bit, talk about that Giants game where the Colts obviously overcame a 10-point halftime deficit. And boy, did it look like they were in trouble, but they were able to pull that one out. And then we'll also look forward in terms of injuries, what's going on in that front. I always like to recap those. But I'm going to do something a little different this week. I'm not going to so much get into the X's and O's and necessarily what's happening on the field. I want to instead take you inside the locker room, and I'll do that in the second half of the podcast after our break. I think there's some real small signs, actually not so small signs, that this team really is on the right track, and I'll share with you some of that so you understand what I'm talking about. But there's some real interesting stuff there that you don't always necessarily get to convey in stories and tweets and that kind of thing. And I want to be able to share some of that with you. So really excited to bring you in on some of that. So stay tuned for that in a little bit. But back to the top. Let's talk about, briefly, just the Giants game. One thing I like about that is the Colts showed me something else in this game. They showed me another side of themselves. And I like that they were able to win a game where things didn't go well for them. Not everything went perfect in this game. There was a big challenge there, and much of that challenge was posed from within. It was self-inflicted issues, self-inflicted mistakes, penalties, a couple drop passes, just things that were avoidable. But the fact is, those are realities. Those things happen, and you've got to find a way to overcome them. Because not every play is going to go as you scripted. Who knew? Well, as it turns out, it's hard to win 8 out of 9 games in the NFL. Who knew that? So the fact that they had a little bit of a struggle against the Giants, look, it's nothing to celebrate, but I actually think there's some growth that occurred there on Sunday. I think there's a lot the Colts can take away from it. What they proved to me is that they can win a game when they're not at their best. And when you can do that, when you can refocus and pull yourself together, get up off the mat, that tells me that this team has indeed grown. It's I don't want to say easy to win a game running away like they did against Dallas, but you know, certainly when you're clicking on all cylinders, it starts to kind of come easy for you, right? After a while. And the other team sort of tunes out. And as Al-Quadim Muhammad told me the other night after the Cowboys game, we took their heart. They quit. And it's hard for me to disagree with him. I think he had a lot of truth in that statement. But this was a much different situation, this particular game. And I think to see the Colts not go in the tank and not sort of, you know, get outside of themselves and still continue to do what got them to that point after halftime, I thought that was something to really take heart in. And it showed me a maturity that I didn't know if this team had. And I think we can see them in a little bit different light because of that. And I don't think it's being too dramatic, I guess, if you would, to say that. I think, you know, they're a young team, and they're a team that hadn't been tested in many ways and had this dramatic turnaround. And so, you know, when that was a situation maybe they hadn't encountered during this winning streak. So the fact that they were able to pull it out, I think, as I said, that told me a lot. They also did a little bit of that in the Oakland game, which I think was notable. They certainly played well offensively that game, but they had some defensive struggles, and they had to slam the door shut at the end, and they were able to do that. So they've had a couple of these instances now, but this was probably the most pronounced of those types of games. And I thought the Colts acquitted themselves well. Look, you've got to be able to win in every kind of scenario. And this was you know, one of many types of scenarios you're going to face. And the Colts got it done. So good news there. Now, they're in a playoff game, basically, on Sunday, as you know, going down to Tennessee. They've had a lot of success there. But you throw it all out the window. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. Because none of those games meant as much as this one is going to mean on Sunday. And I tell you what, though. If you're a Colts fan, you should feel pretty good about this game. One thing I'd say about this team, and this kind of goes back to what I was talking about a little bit ago there. They're not going to be fazed by this, okay? They have been hanging on for dear life for like 6 weeks now, okay? And so when you get to 1-5, which they were, obviously, after six games, look, your season is about to crumble right in front of your eyes. So you don't think that's pressure? You don't think you have a lot to play for when you're basically one of the worst teams record-wise in the NFL? They did. They were 1-5. And they were able to keep their composure, pull themselves together under that sort of stress, under that, under the heavy weight of what was facing them at that point, and able to put together one hell of a run down the stretch. So I don't think the team that pulled itself up by its bootstraps in that situation, I don't think that team is going to be fazed by this game, because they've already faced more daunting situations, okay? They've already faced 1-5, and seeing their season teetering and slipping away, and they were able to pull it back and get it back on the tracks. So I don't think this team is going to be fazed by what they're going to face down in Tennessee, not at all. They're just too composed for that, in my opinion. So I'd feel good about it. This team's grown up a lot. And as I said, they've been basically in a playoff for quite some time right now at this point already. In terms of the matchup, I mean, look, we'll see what happens with Marcus Mariota. But at the end of the day, I just think the lack of, I think, really dynamic plays from the Tennessee offense, I think that is what's going to level the playing field here. The Colts have more potential for big plays, so I think they win there. They obviously have the quarterback edge, Andrew Luck over Marcus Mariota, or certainly if he doesn't play, they certainly have the edge as well. So Blaine Gabbert, I guess, would be the option. So they've got the quarterback edge no matter what. They've got the edge in big plays. I think the defense is, believe it or not, look, I think it's a wash, all right? Jarrell Casey being on IR, and he's probably their best defensive player. He's one of their best players, period. Jarrell Casey is a game changer, and him not being there, I think, really takes their defensive, makes the defensive challenge a very different one for the Colts in terms of the defense they're facing. I think they match up pretty well. I mean, they already have proven that, obviously, by certainly matching up pretty well in the game here in Indianapolis a few weeks ago. But even beyond that, I just think there's nobody on that defense I look at and say, okay, that's the guy who's going to beat you. Who is that on the Tennessee Titans defense? I just don't know who that is. So I feel like the Colts are in a really good spot in terms of the matchup there. I think they should feel pretty good about it. Let's run down injuries just a little bit here. So, Eric Ebron, I'm recording this on Wednesday evening, so keep that in mind in case things change by the time you hear this. But Eric Ebron, look, I feel pretty good about his availability, potential availability. So, Ebron came in the locker room on Wednesday, and remember, he's in the concussion protocol, and I don't know that there's anything scientific behind this stupid statement I'm about to make, but he walked in the locker room on Wednesday, and he was literally the loudest dude in there, okay? This guy is screaming at the top of his lungs about this guy, that guy. Luck's doing his interview with the media. He's totally interrupting the interview, and it was like, dude, I thought you had a concussion. Again, I'm not a doctor. Maybe there's nothing scientific in this, and I'm making stupid assumptions based on nothing. But he certainly didn't seem like a guy who was worried about his fate. And he had an Instagram post where he made it very clear he planned to be out there. So now he did not practice on Wednesday. And I know how that looks, but I think he was cleared to practice from the concussion, not cleared to play, cleared to practice. This is what it appeared to be, because Coach Frank Reich indicated earlier that he would practice. But as it turned out, he did not practice. It appears, though, that was more related to a knee issue that he has, and he has had that for a little while now. So Ebron's been nursing a lot of different injuries this year. So I don't, from the best of my ability, the best as best I can tell, him missing practice on Wednesday may very well not have been related to the concussion. So let's just assume that's true. If he practices on Thursday, he can have his non-contact day and then get out there and practice on Friday and be able to still pass the concussion protocol, the necessary steps. So I think he'll be okay. Feeling good about his situation. Now, elsewhere, Ryan Kelly, that one's a tougher call at this point. Not sure where that's going to go. And I got a very non-committal answer from Ryan Kelly when I talked to him after the game on Sunday. I have not talked to him since, so we will see where that goes. Some good news, Anthony Walker back out of practice on Wednesday. That's huge. I thought the middle of the defense, I thought they missed Anthony Walker, both in coverage and just in terms of tackling on Sunday. So he would be a really big presence to have in there, especially against a big back like Tennessee has. So I like the fact that he looks like he'll play. And then Mark Glowinski back in the lineup as well at Wednesday's practice. You know, get more of that talent back there in the middle of the offensive line, especially with Kelly not being a sure thing. So feeling somewhat encouraged on the injury front. And then finally, I'll throw in, just for the heck of it, T.Y., just because I have to, right? He's in the injury report and he didn't practice. But T.Y. Hilton's going to play, I guess, because T.Y. Hilton always plays. So no point in beleaguering that point. So let's take a break. Got lots more for you coming up afterward. But let's take a break, and then I'm going to get into, like I said, some of the inner workings of the locker room that I want to share with you. Some really good stuff that I think you'll really benefit from and learn a lot from, I hope, here in just a moment. Be right back.
All right, Coles fans, we have a great deal for you. Let me tell you guys about TickPick, this amazing app to buy tickets to any game, concert, or other event. Are you looking for tickets to this week's game and want to know exactly what you're going to pay for those tickets? I do, and if you do too, then TickPick and their amazing and simple app is right up your alley. The TickPick app is extremely easy to use, and best of all, there are absolutely no surprises at checkout. Listen, you find the game, find the seats you want, and you're all set. Think StubHub without any fees. You get the same tickets, same seller, but absolutely zero fees. You save 10 to 15% on every ticket order. And get this, for our listeners, they're offering you an amazing offer of $15 off any single order over $99 through the end of the season. All you have to do is enter SB Colts as your gift code at checkout. This isn't a sign-up only offer either. They went all in for you guys. Not only do I use TickPick, but I approached them and wanted to get the word out on this company because it was so stinking easy, and nobody likes to find the seats they want, then get that smack in the face at checkout of another $35 to $50 in fees being added. I'll never use another ticket app again. It's very user-friendly, and you get the same great tickets with lightning-quick ticket transfers. Remember, that's TickPick, and use the gift code SBColts to save yourself $15 on any order over $99. Go to TickPick and take advantage of this offer today, 100% verified Colts tickets without any fees.
All right, I'm back. So one of the things that I wanted to kind of do in this week's podcast was kind of fill you in on kind of what kind of team this is. And I will tell you, this has been a really fun year for me to cover this team because it's been such an interesting group. And what I mean by that is it's a different kind of team. This team is not one like most teams I've ever covered here or elsewhere or in any sport, really. This is a really unique team. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. I think the character of this team is part of what's taken it this far. It's part of the reason they've been able to put together this run that they've put together. And I didn't know this about this team at first. I think this happened over time, this realization that I've come to. But I just think the makeup of this team has really played a big role in its success this year. And one thing I'll tell you, it's like when you, I spend a lot of time in the locker room, okay? 45 minutes for, you know, 4 to 5 times a week. So, I mean, look, 45 minutes is not a long time. But certainly you can glean a lot from watching all these interactions that you see, right? For that length of time, you know, over the course of an entire season, right? You're around these guys like every day, like I am. You're going to pick up some things. And one of the things that I've picked up on is a couple of things. Number one, general chemistry overall. One of the things that I've seen is there is an absolute closeness among the players on this team. And I know you think, okay, well, that's true on every team, right? And, you know, a lot of us played sports and, you know, some of your best friends, right, were your teammates growing up. But it's a little different at the NFL level. I mean, you know, these guys are hired guns in some cases. You got guys who change teams all the time. You know, there's free agency. Guys come from, you know, very different backgrounds, and maybe they don't have a lot in common. So, I mean, look, it's hard to just kind of throw 53 guys in a pot and expect them to all kind of be on the same page and talk the same language, right? That's a lot to expect. But that's happened here, and it's been very interesting. I think this is not by accident. Chris Ballard and Frank Reich placed a real big premium on the type of player, the type of individual, the type of human being that they were going to put on this football team. And I think you're starting to see that pay some dividends. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Oftentimes on these football teams, the offense and the defense, they're like two different worlds, okay? They're extremely segregated. Not because they don't like each other. It's just, that's just kind of how it is, right? I mean, you do what we do. We're in different meetings. We have different coaches. It's just different, right? Yet, on this team, I think I've seen more closeness between offensive and defensive players than any team I've ever been associated with. I've been covering the NFL 14 seasons. So, I mean, I talk about a lot of different teams and, you know, different places, you know, different makeups, successful teams, bad teams. I mean, you name it, right? And so I have seen so many instances where this team kind of blows up stereotypes, and that's one of them. And I'll give you an example. So I talked about Anthony Walker earlier. Well, Anthony Walker and Jacoby Brissett, okay, middle linebacker and quarterback, during the day, all right, in meetings and what have you, they have no interaction, more or less, right? But they're like inseparable, those two guys. And I just find that so unique. It's so interesting to me that you see those kind of relationships being forged. And I think that tells me they have a really healthy locker room. The other thing they have is they have a lot of youth, right? And yet you're seeing young guys who do truly, truly gravitate to the veterans and are not know-it-alls. And I think that's very important. I'll give you an example. Jabal Sheard, who I think has had a great year in his own right, he has taken an absolute huge role in sort of taking Tyquan Lewis under his wing. And I can tell they have really developed a closeness between them. And how fortunate is Tyquan Lewis to have that, to have a guy who's won a Super Bowl, okay, a guy who has played for three different organizations, got all in different schemes, has all kinds of different experiences, and just a veteran player generally, and they're very, very much a pro at what he does. Jabal Sheard, he's a guy you never hear from, he never complains, he just does what he has to do, he just works. It's all he does, man. Never, you know, he practices hard. He does everything the right way, and this guy has, I think, from a very, it's become very personal to him to really help Tyquan Lewis be all that he can be. And, you know, here's a guy who may be in the process of taking his job one day, for all we know, right? I mean, it's certainly, they can coexist, and they have to have a lot of depth, certainly, on that defensive line. But there's a lot of players who would not take that approach. And I have seen it myself, okay? There have been a lot of guys who are completely unwilling to help mold a guy and to help sort of bring a young guy along. And, And here you have a guy who is completely open to it, doing it just out of the kindness of his heart. And I think Tyquan Lewis is going to be a better man and a better player for it. So I just think that's the kind of thing you see on this team. And what's interesting is I think a lot of this has to do, certainly I talked about Chris Ballard and the priorities that he had in terms of the types of players he wanted to acquire. But you know who else has a big role in this? It's Frank Reich. And I wrote a story, in fact, today, posted on The Athletic, that I hope you'll read. I think you'll learn so much about who these guys are, or who Frank Reich is, I should say, if you do. And what I tried to communicate was, you know, why Frank Reich has successfully gotten his players to buy in. Frank Reich is a really interesting guy. Do you know he does not curse? Now, he was a pastor, so maybe that doesn't shock you. But I'm saying this kind of as a joke, but also I'm also serious about this to some extent. Because, look, he is the opposite of what you consider to be the stereotype football coach. Okay, he's on the other end of the spectrum. And yet, his message has gotten through crystal clear. There is no equivocation. And guys have bought all the way into his message. But they've done it without him having to be a hellraiser, and without him having to be, you know, a guy who maybe is this fire and brimstone, you know, sort of coach, right? He's not that at all. He's much, much more like Tony Dungy. In fact, he's very much like Tony Dungy, if you are familiar with Tony's style, right? So how does he do it? Well, he's just a really effective communicator to begin with. So that certainly helps. And I think also the fact that he just remains himself, true to himself, and doesn't try to be someone else, guys just really respect that. But one thing that Frank Reich told me that I think is so important here, and maybe is something that I did not necessarily connect the dots on initially, was he said, you know, part of the reason it works is because we got the right kind of locker room. And that goes back to what I've been talking about here. You just have the right kinds of guys who are open to that, and don't take advantage of the fact that he's not going to be chasing after them and hounding them, you know, to handle their business. He respects them and trusts them enough to know that, okay, they're going to do what they have to do. They're going to study. They're going to work hard. They're going to do all the things I expect of them. And I think that trust goes both ways. The players trust in the coach, right? They put their fate in his hands. But at the same time, they're really returning the favor because Frank Reich trusts them. And that's why he's not sort of a helicopter parent, if you will, so to speak. He lets them have their space. He lets them do their thing. But they've got to do their part. And they are holding up their end of the bargain. And the reason they're doing it is because of the makeup of that locker room. So I just think that is, as much as anything, a reason for this success. And Frank, if you ask him, I mean, he will tell you. He said, we would not be having this kind of success if it weren't for the types of guys that we have. So, you know, is this a chicken and the egg scenario? Maybe, you know, who's more responsible? Is it Frank Reich and his approach, or is it the players and their professionalism? I mean, I don't know, but who the hell cares? It's working. And I think that's what matters. But there really is just sort of a camaraderie in that locker room that I think is just so striking to me. They also are just good guys. You know, as a reporter, look, you're not their highest priority, right? And that's fine. Like, I never get upset about that. I mean, they're there to win games. They're not there to talk to me. I mean, they're required to do it, and we have to get access. They're required to give us access and all those things. But, I mean, look, I mean, what's more important to Andrew Luck, right? Studying the Tennessee Titans defense or talking to me? I get it. I mean, I'm not arrogant about that. I don't care. I'm not never offended by any of that. However, one thing I'd say is, I would say this is probably the first year in my career covering the NFL where I have felt like there's not one guy in the locker room who gives me a hard time. Not one. I mean, there are guys who don't like to talk to me. Not me personally, but they don't love doing interviews in some cases. And, you know, and they see the media coming and they decide it's time to eat lunch. I'm okay with that. Like, again, I'm not offended. But in terms of being respectful and being a professional, I would say there's not a guy in there who has been rude to me. There's not a guy in there who has shown me nothing but the utmost respect. And to me, that is so telling. That tells you a lot about who they are. That tells you about the fact that you have the right kinds of guys. And I know they're playing football, and you don't want choir guys, you don't want choir boys to play football. I get that. I think you need some guys rough around the edges. I mean, look, it's football. It's the most brutal sport you can imagine. But at the same time, if you want a culture and you want a program and a true organization, you've got to have some guys who are willing to buy into that. And that's what the Colts have. And so I think they should be really proud of what they've built here in terms of the chemistry and the makeup of that locker room. They have a lot to be proud of. And I just tell you, I think that is going to, that can take you a long way. You know, you got to have talent. You can't suck, okay, and just be good guys, because that won't get you very far. But you can have both. You can have talent, and you can have chemistry and character. And they have that. So, look, you know, I'm sure that, you know, you don't need me to tell you they're good guys for you to love the team if you love the Colts, but I'm here to tell you, they're good guys. It's not a facade. These guys are the real deal. And I have really enjoyed working with them this year. Let's see. I hope it continues. I'm having fun doing it. So no reason for it to stop now. So we will see what happens Sunday night in Tennessee. But I'm going with the Colts. That's my pick. I haven't come up with a score. I guess if you put me on the spot, I'm going to say 29-17. I think the Colts win this one. I think that the defense makes it hard on the Titans. Whether they have a couple turnovers, we will see. They're pretty decent from the turnover standpoint, but I think they're going to limit the big plays. I think they're going to make it hard on them, and the Colts have been really solid against the run, so I don't see that being the area where this game is decided. So let's see. That's the way I'm feeling. And then we'll see what happens elsewhere. But I feel like the Colts win. I feel like they're playoff bound. And I feel like this train is going to keep on chugging for a little while longer, at least. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the process. So come back next week. Same time, same place. Who knows? We'll have something to talk about. I can't guarantee you if it'll be a win or a loss, but we will have something to talk about. This has been a fun year. And I hope you learned a little something tonight or whenever you're listening to this. And thank you for joining me on another episode. I'll be back next week. Listen, in the meantime, please check out The Athletic. Lots of you have subscribed, and I really appreciate that. We've got tons of stuff going on there. Bob Kravitz is now on board, as you probably know, my old co-worker from the Indy Star. And so we're just going to get better and better. Lots of stuff in the works for 2019 at The Athletic as well that you will not want to miss. So please check that out. Lots of subscription specials. If you can't find one, tweet me. I'll find you the latest special and send it your way. Other than that, I'd like to say thanks for Stampede Blue. Check them out. They do a great job over there. And certainly appreciate them hosting the podcast and giving me this platform. So that's it for now. Have a good week. Looking forward to the game. Have a blast. And we'll regroup next week and see what we got. Thanks for listening. Steve Hall.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bone. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.